The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors. But then my chance to get to heaven slim. Oh, I used to worry about the future, but then I threw my caution to the wind. I had no reason to be carefree, no, 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 until I took a trip to the other side of town. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know I heard that boogie rhythm. Hey, I had no choice but to get down, 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 dance. Nothing left for me to do but dance. All these bad times I'm going through, just dance. Got candy in my ears tonight, baby. Ooh, I feel the thunder, see the lightning. I know this anger's heaven sent, so I've got to hang out on my hang-ups. Cause on the boogie I feel so hell-bent. Hey, hey, reaction that I get. I know I've never ever felt like this before. I don't know what to do, but then that's nothing new. Stuck between hell and high water, I need a cure to make it through. Hey, dancing, nothing left for me to do but dance. All these bad times I'm going through, just dance. Hey, got candy in my ears tonight, baby. You know I got candy in my.
All right, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Beats, Rhymes, and Democracy here on KFAI. We are joined today in studio by none other than Representative Esther Agbaje.
Agbaje, yeah.
Agbaje,
yeah.
I've been working on.
You got good. You got good.
I was given a little help from one of my lobbying colleagues.
Oh yeah.
One day I was like, I'm gonna have the representative on the air. Which we've been trying to get you on the air for a while now.
Yeah, that's true. Especially Mr. Buckner over here has been trying to get me on, and we have not made it happen until today.
My representative is black and my Lambo is blue. How about that?
Hey!
I like that. See where that Lambo at? We also in studio, of course, we have the Don Data B. Buckner. L. Boogie is in the building as well. On this beautiful afternoon, we're recording a couple days early for this show. And right now, can I call you Esther?
Yeah.
Hey, Esther.
Yeah, that's good.
Esther is my younger brother's grandma's name.
So oh, wow.
Easy name, held in high regard. Rest in peace. Just a wonderful woman who helped bring us up. So when I hear the name Esther, I think of really good things. So,
yeah.
So you share a name with someone who's very important to me. I know you have been on the grind.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling El Boog earlier today that you are on probably the most powerful committee in the legislature, on the House side and Senate side. There are Ways and Means committees. Or on the Senate side, is it Finance?
Finance.
So they eliminated the Ways and Means Committee. But that is the committee that holds the purse strings, makes the final decisions on expenditures, and we are in a budget year.
Yes.
So your role as co-chair is incredibly important. We want to get to know you. Maybe we could start there with just a little bit of background and then get into some of the work you're doing at the legislature now. And I know you only got a little time with us today because you got to get back over on the grind and make sure that that good things happen after the session. Could you just give us a brief overview of who Esther is and, you know, your life experience? We talked about D.C. and time spent there, but just a little brief insight into Esther and what makes you tick.
Well, sure. Thank you so much for having me on. This is excellent. Again, my name is Esther Agbaje. I represent House District 59B, which covers parts of downtown and North Minneapolis. So really excited. It's my third term now. So thank you so much to my constituents. I really appreciate it. It's been an honor serving for this district, one of the most vibrant districts across the state of Minnesota. So I grew up in Minnesota. I'm actually from St. Paul. Sorry, Minneapolis. Yes. So I'm originally from St. Paul. We spent some good times there in the Midway neighborhood. My dad's a priest in the Episcopal Church, so that moved us around. So I have lived in Brainerd, Minnesota, as well as Faribault, Minnesota. So I got a little bit of all parts of Minnesota through me. And as you mentioned, after that, I went straight to D.C. after I graduated high school and spent about 10 years off and on doing various higher education degrees. Senator Champion would be mad if I said I did not. I graduated from Harvard Law School. So that is where I get my law degree from. And I did practice for about 4.5 years when I came back to Minnesota in 2017. So
Harvard Law grad. I saw you spent some time. My cousin is also an alum of the University of Pennsylvania,
yeah.
One of the Ivy League schools. So you got that Ivy League pedigree.
Yeah.
And instead of staying out east, you came back.
I came back. Minnesota's home. I mean, I really felt that, actually, to be honest, I saw a lot of good things happening in Minnesota with the work folks have been doing here around housing justice, making this a good place for people to raise their kids, education. I just kept seeing Minnesota come up in the news. So I was like, I got to go back to my roots. That's where I'm from. So I've just been honored to be able to continue on with that work with a lot of great activists who are here. And so I spent a lot of my pro bono time while I was practicing doing housing work with the Volunteer Lawyers Network. And when I ran for office, that was like my major platform. So really want to make sure that people are housed, really want to make sure people have that foundational setting. And in my second term, did a lot of work on the tenants, landlord-tenant rights work, to really making sure that tenants have a much more even playing field with their landlords. So that's kind of, you know, that's my work life. I mean, I think, like, personally, you know, I just really love being in Minnesota. I like the outdoors a little bit. Really big fan of music. So thank you so much for all the music that you have been, I've been able to get to listen to here today. But, like, you know, jazz, hip hop, house music, all that type of stuff puts me in a happy place. So I'm good.
That's what's up. That's what's up.
Oh, and I'm just saying, thank you for serving the 59B.
Yes.
I mean, again, I get to vote for you.
Yeah.
All the time. And going to continue to do that. And, you know, I'm just really excited. Seeing you continue to grow at the legislature, getting in certain positions right now. Tell us, what's that biggest learning curve that you're still dealing with right now?
Oh, gosh. I think the biggest learning curve is really just understanding how these spaces weren't really meant for us, and they don't really want us to be in them. And so, like, intellectually, you kind of understand that, but it's really hard to see that at work emotionally. And so we are fighting every day in order for Black and brown folks to have a place, to have not only just a seat at the table, but to, like, be considered. And we continue to really do that great work. And I think, you know, particularly the past 2 years when the DFL had the trifecta, we were able to ensure that we were putting workers first, we were putting families first, we were putting folks who have been left behind first. Like, we were actually making that a priority. And so, you know, this year, the toughest part of this year is just seeing people trying to chip away at those wins. So it's been difficult. You know, one of the big things I think we're going to be fighting for is making sure that we protect undocumented immigrants and their access to healthcare. That is a really huge deal for us, for a lot of people. It was one of the bills that I carried. I carried the standalone version. And so, you know, it's really important to me to make sure that we protect that, and that we make sure that we're providing health care for everyone. And, you know, personally, too, for me, I'm also a child of immigrants. Like, you know, my parents moved to Minnesota from Nigeria, and they created a beautiful life for both me and my brothers. And, you know, I'm eternally grateful to them and for all the work that they put in. And so, to me, it is really important that we protect everyone in our community, particularly as we consider what's happening from the federal government of trying to scapegoat immigrants when really they're the ones who are really contributing to our society in ways that we don't always see every day.
That is very true. That is very true. And do you know that I joined you on my first door knock ever?
Yes.
For you?
Yes.
I'm always grateful because this was my first exposure into the political space. I always was adjacent, watching, reading, observing, but shy. I grew up in northern Wisconsin and came out when I needed to, especially when we had challengers to our party, the Democratic Party. But I'm always grateful for you to make that such a great experience.
Oh, I'm glad you had a good experience. That is the one thing, especially when from the campaign side, always wanting to make sure that people walk away with understanding a little bit more of how the process works, but also understanding that it's an opportunity to engage your neighbors. And so I hope that that was what you took away from that, and that's what we strive for. So thank you. I'm glad.
One note.
Yeah? Oh, there you go.
I got to experience it. I think it was meant to be.
Yeah.
And then I was back up for catching cats when we were trying to get people involved.
Yeah.
And then we had some wins, too.
Yeah.
It was a really great experience. But I wonder, there's a lot of people that want to get into this space, and learning curves are a big challenge. Mm-hmm. But how does one come into this space and want to be... running for office, how do you get on that fast track of learning?
You just have to start. When I was really interested in running for office as a student, I remember going to this event, and they had people there who had run for city council from different cities around the country. And one woman, she said, you just have to start. I had no idea what she meant by that. And then a couple years later, I found myself in Minnesota with an opportunity, and I was like, well, I think I'm just going to have to start. And so what you do is you start with your core group of folks, right? Whether that's family, whether that's friends, whether that's people that you have come across in your organizing spaces, and you just start to build out. And one of the things I tell, especially first-time candidates, is sometimes the people you think are there for you for every single step of the way, every milestone in your life, they may not be there for you when you decide to run for office. Mm-hmm. But someone else who you just met is going to be your ride or die, right? And so you can't take it personal. It just means that people are meant to serve different roles in your life.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's definitely something that folks need to think about. But I would say definitely go ahead and do it. You know, the paperwork isn't usually terribly hard to fill out. It does cost a little bit of money. But raising money, even though it can be scary, is actually not as hard as it sounds, especially if you have a really good core message and you're really clear about the work that you want to bring to your community. People will resonate with that. People will gravitate towards you, and you'll find your people in that process. And I think the thing about a campaign that's successful is not so much the winning or losing, but really the connections you make along the way and the way to be able to share your platform and your vision of the world with your community.
Mm. What I really appreciate with Esther is the whole conversation of reaching out to new people, because, again, what we were excited about when we first met Esther was she was willing to roll up her sleeves.
Mm-hmm.
And so the work that we were doing through our network and organization at that point in time, all she did was, how can I help?
Mm-hmm.
How can I get involved? And it was based around her values. And what she's demonstrating right now, quite honestly, is how simple, especially in the state of Minnesota, we're a lot easier to do than most other communities across the country, that you can step up, step in, and say, how can I help, and start to roll up. So, I mean, please take, Esther's example as much as possible. And win, lose, or draw, you change the conversation when you participate.
Mm-hmm.
And not just even from a candidate standpoint, but also working within your parties. And again, we'll do the nonpartisan thing. Get involved in your parties one way or another, because that's what really grounds what happens and all the craziness on the other side. That, we're able to kind of mitigate when good people step up and say, this is what we want.
Yeah.
Again, can't stress it enough. That's why I vote for it every 2 years.
That's right.
Thank you.
That's right. Okay, let's take a quick break. You're listening to Beats, Rhymes, and Democracy here on KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis, KFAI.org, on the net, Radio Without Boundaries. We'll be right back, y'all. We'll be right back.
Discover the hidden stories of Minneapolis during Doors Open Minneapolis, happening May 17th and 18th from 10 to 5. Get free access to 75 unique venues, from historic theaters and sacred spaces to modern marvels and behind-the-scenes gems like KFAI.
Meet the people who keep these spaces alive and learn why they matter to our city's story. KFAI will be open Saturday, May 17th from 10 to 5. No registration needed. Details at doorsopenminneapolis.org.
Hey, it's Minnesota. We love a long goodbye. Saturday, May 10th, KFAI brings you Gang of Four live at the Fine Line for their final North American tour, The Long Goodbye. After 45 years, Gang of Four are hanging up their post-punk spurs, but they're going out with a bang. This will be a double-set show including a start-to-finish performance of their groundbreaking 1979 debut album, Entertainment. It'll be a no-bunk slam dunk of post-punk when Gang of Four takes the stage one last time to give you The Long Goodbye. Tickets for Gang of Four, The Long Goodbye at the Fine Line can be found at the First Avenue website. Visit first-avenue.com for more details.
Programming is supported by Bremer Bank. With bankers who know that in business, relationships matter more than ever, and understanding is everything. More at Bremer.com.
Right, welcome back. Beats, Rhymes, and Democracy. We have Representative Esther Agbaje with us today, sharing a little bit about her story, backstory, but also the work that you are engaged in now at the Capitol. We're getting into the conference committee period. It's like the third quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter, right? Actually, to use a sports analogy.
I think we're still in the third quarter. I think we're still in the third quarter.
So it's already been super complicated. You know, 2 years ago, the state passed a budget to the tune of $70 billion.
17. Well, the added benefit. Yes. Okay. 70.
So,
yes.
So overall,
the $17 billion surplus that led to a $70 billion budget. Yes, you are correct. Sorry.
That's all right. But that was a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that had to do with really things that had backed up over the previous 10 years, maybe, that needed to get detoxified, right? Move through the system, right? So that other good things had happened. So that was an amazing feat. And there was a lot of one-time spending, a lot of programs that have been neglected received consideration, and under the trifecta, a lot of really good things happened, and the kitty was full at that time. Now, as you start in this particular session, this biennium, the state is not as flush with cash, and we're on this borderline of deficit, and you know, the out years, of course. I mean, for insiders, maybe. The lay folks don't understand, you know, when the state budgets, it budgets with projections into the future, where you're including inflation and other factors in those spending efforts for the out years. But compare and contrast from that period of time, not only the politics, right, where you're working in an environment where there is a tie, 67 Dems, 67 GOP members in the House. How does this compare to 2023 in terms of working and getting things accomplished?
Very different. No, I mean, you know, we still always have to negotiate with both sides, both parties. I think that's just the name of the game. But I think this year is different because, you know, we had to actually fight for the integrity of the institution at the beginning of the session. So if folks remember, Democrats denied quorum from the House for about 5 weeks, I believe, at the beginning of the session because the Republicans said that they were going to overturn a election certificate of a member who was duly elected by their community. And we knew that if we let them do that, it wasn't just going to be that one person, but it would be all of us over time because they knew then that they would have that power to just cause chaos in the legislature. So we stayed out for 5 weeks because of that. We did get an agreement with them. And so, you know, there was some time where we now have to work briskly together to develop a state budget to ensure that as many people as possible are protected from A, the federal government, but B, also that they maintain their jobs, their programs. And then, as you said, we are doing that with a backdrop of a potential budget deficit after this current budget year. So there's a lot of things at play, and it makes it really interesting to have these conversations and negotiations around what is important for the people of Minnesota. And so I think what we're seeing, particularly in the budgets, the initial budgets that you've seen passed from both the House and the Senate, we're seeing where the priorities lie that both parties can agree to. And I think that is, you know, part of that is important from a nonpartisan perspective of saying this is what Minnesotans care about and we want to move forward with that. But it does make it really interesting and a little bit challenging when you compare it to 2 years ago when we were pushing forward really hard on people-centered policies. And so we don't have as much of that this year as we had 2 years ago, but we are still ensuring that every step of the way, we're protecting those people-centered policies that we won 2 years ago, and we are trying to advance what we can where we can that matches the needs of all the representatives in the House.
Where have you been able to find agreement then? We see nothing but division in the news and in the, you know, articles on TV, and it's like everything's divided. We don't agree on nothing, but it sounds like there are some things that you've been able to agree on. Are you able to share any of those?
Oh, yeah. I think one of the main areas actually that Republicans and Democrats have been able to agree on has actually been in the housing space, which I love because that's my favorite space. But if you watched the love fest that was on that bill as that bill was moving through the House, both our Republican and Democratic co-chairs really had a sense that Minnesotans need housing that's affordable and dignified for them to live in. And so we created a budget that is heavier on funding for building more housing, both in the metro area and in the rural areas of the state of Minnesota. And so they were able to come together and figure out a budget that did just that, which I'm grateful to them for. I was glad to be part of that committee to hear those bills and also be able to work with a group of people that were committed to that vision. And so I think that is a really strong area. It's a foundational area. It's glad to know that both Republicans and Democrats understand the importance of housing, understand, I think as one Republican representative likes to say, that housing is like a North Star for people. You need to be able to come back home. Yeah.
Especially in a state like Minnesota where it gets real cold.
Exactly. Exactly. So the fact that we're all aligned on that is very hopeful. And so I think as we continue in the years, hopefully we'll see more agreement, more alignment in the housing space. You know, one area, too, I think is also really fascinating. We have been trying to push a reformation of some of the zoning laws from a statewide perspective, just because we know the history of how cities have dealt with housing, from redlining to segregation to, you know, aesthetic mandates that make it hard for people to pursue density or, you know, people from different backgrounds, economic backgrounds especially, to live near each other. So we want to update the zoning laws just to create a baseline to be able to say, hey, cities, if as long as you meet this baseline, you can kind of do whatever else you want. But here's the baseline to ensure that people will have a place to live. And we do have an interesting set of bedfellows from both the Democratic side and the Republican side that support it. And you also have an interesting set of bedfellows from both the Democratic side and the Republican side that oppose it. So hopefully one day we'll get to see some of those bills go up on the floor. I would love to see that board. But for now, you know, we're still working behind the scenes, still pushing it, still trying to get to a point where we can pass some really good zoning reformation bills.
That's really exciting. There's a lot of, I'm from the Northland, and I'm seeing a lot of challenges with housing up there. Mm-hmm. There's been some folks coming in buying large purchases of land, hoping to create their haven up there once things, weather starts changing. And there's a lot of different things happening in that Duluth and Northland area that I hadn't seen growing up, and that was really concerning, and it's refreshing to hear that that's what's being worked on. And but if anybody ever wonders that, I remember living in Blaine and looking at my development and saw my degrees in urban studies, and I was like, oh, they carved the school district lines out just right so that these houses over in this upper corner of the development got the better school district. Mm-hmm. Everybody else was over in these other school districts. If anybody ever wonders how that all goes, just look at a development. Mm-hmm. And I could tell you which one, if you message me, which one to look at, because it's still the same way.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a real thing, and people don't really understand that. We live where we live. Our kids go to school where they go to school, but don't realize that that's intentional.
It is all intentional. It's all been planned. And, you know, I will say a lot of our cities are trying to rectify a lot of those wrongs, but some of our cities are not moving as quickly as we would like them to. And so that's where the impetus of those bills have come from. It's not to take anything away from cities in this sense of like trying to take power away from them, but it is really trying to ensure that when the state sees something happening that's not fair across the state, we have a responsibility to step in to ensure that we have a level of fairness that cities can then build off of depending on what their needs are for their own residents and constituents.
There's so much going on between the federal and... How are you dealing with that mess?
We are dealing with it. I think the biggest complaint are the Medicaid cuts, right? We saw that President Trump released his presidential budget the other day. He released a budget the other day, and it... my understanding is it increases the military spending by a lot and cuts everybody else. But really, I mean, I think what that's concerning, I mean, we'll have to see what Congress does, but the big thing that Congress has said that they're working on is $800 billion of cuts to the Medicaid program. The Medicaid program around the country is what sustains people's health care. And a lot of people may not even recognize that sometimes the part of the insurance they're getting or even all the insurance they're getting might be from Medicaid. So in Minnesota, we know that should those $800 billion of cuts come through, we are looking at around $2 billion a year missing from Minnesota's budget.
That's $2 billion when you're already working on a $17 billion or so. What is the number?
So the we passed, you know, as Jamie was saying, we did pass a $70 billion budget 2 years ago. Yeah, because we had that $17 billion surplus. Now we don't have that surplus anymore. We still have a surplus. It's like around $600-ish million. And, you know, I think in a normal time frame, that would be, it's a good day. But we are dealing with a hostile federal government. And so we shore up as much as we can to try to mitigate some of those cuts that are coming down, some of which we've already started to see over at the Minnesota Department of Health.
Exactly, because those are the things that I'm really concerned about. That is real, that detrimental to the society. It's our seniors, it's our youth, it's all these pieces above, where 2 million off of is a significant hit, period. Now you have to reimagine how you operate. I'm hearing from friends from MNSCU to Department Transportation to all these other places saying, we're gonna have to make some cuts, we're gonna have to make some adjustments. And it's almost as if the federal government is setting the states up.
They are. You know, I think Minnesota's in a good enough place that we have a relatively diversified income streams and relatively diversified programming, and we are reliant on the federal government, but we're not reliant in such a way that some of these other states, I think, are going to come to find if these Medicaid cuts come from Congress, that they will suffer tremendously.
Ironically, it's a lot of the red states that did vote for this, you know, administration. Because what I am worried about is when you start to see how those states get broken apart, they can't deliver the services and everything else, then it's the conversation of, well, who's going to take the weight? Because the issues don't go away. Housing, health care, all these others, education don't go away. But who's going to take that weight? And now all of a sudden, we see the fire sale of these small little companies coming in and say, we'll take care of that for a fee and everything else. And that's, so talk about how the resiliency of Minnesota, again, as a Minnesotan who's gone away and come back, talk from that perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, interestingly enough, being in the legislature has shown me that, you know, our budget can be relatively resilient, but it does mean we have some tough choices ahead of us, right? And we have tough choices when it comes to cuts, let's just be honest. But we also have some tough choices and some bold choices that we can make when it comes to revenue raisers, right? So all of the options should be on the table for us. It's not just cut here, cut there, because what happens is cuts are actually people. Cuts are jobs. Cuts are providing services to our elderly, to our young people, to programs that help people get ahead, whether it's through school or through job or through housing. And so I think we, as much as we need to think carefully about our cuts, we also need to think carefully about, but where are places where some members of our community are not contributing as wholly as they can to our society? So I do think we had a press conference about this a couple weeks ago. I do think we need to look at revenue raisers for our wealthiest Minnesotans, for our wealthier corporations as well. We have a lot of multinational corporations headquartered in Minnesota, and I think there are some things there that we can look at to make sure that they are also fairly contributing to our society. I think we also need to look at many of our tax exemptions that we currently have right now. What are some of the things that we can close to start to bring some of that money back into the state? Because what we do with the money as Democrats is we reinvest back in our people. We're not just holding on to the money to hold on to it, or we're not giving tax breaks again to the wealthiest of people. What we're doing is we're saying our kids need help in school. Okay, we're going to put the funding back into our education system. We're going to put it into our higher education system, right? That's how and why we were able to pass programs like the college scholarship program to allow people making less than $80,000 a year to go to college for free. We want people to have access to that higher education level so that way they can continue on and build a prosperous life for themselves. We put, when we had the surplus, $1.2 billion into housing, right? We wanted to make sure, and all of those things are starting to come online. One of the programs that I spearheaded was first generation down payment assistance. There's over 600 families that have been supported by that over the past 2 years, and more to come. We also put some of that into healthcare to, again, increase access to healthcare, increase the type of services that you're getting. So we need to look, as much as we're looking at how do we trim the fat, how do we trim the excess, how do we trim what's inefficient, but we also need to make sure that we are having the conversation about revenue raisers to ensure that we have enough to mitigate the storm that's coming from the federal government.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna take a music break. Thank you for tuning in to Beats, Rhymes, and Democracy here on KFAI, Fresh Air Community Radio. Check us out on the web. We'll be right back, y'all.
I reminisce with bliss of when we was closer and wake up to be greeted by an argument again. You act like a 10, so immature. I try to concentrate on the cure and keep looking at the front door. Thinking if I were to evacuate, you'd probably be straighter than straight and wouldn't have so much hate. Cause you don't know the pain I feel when I see you smiling. And when I roll up, you start wilding. So I front like everything's hunky-dory. But it's a whole different story. You don't like the fact that I'm me. I don't put on a show when it comes time for you to have company. And your friends don't understand your choice of man. They speak proper while my speech is from a garbage can. But regardless, you shouldn't have to be so raw. I'm looking at the front door.
kara Minnesota Care insurance fa yargachu akandendesan bektu nam navigator yokin kara agarsif tu jedamura insurance fa ya iyechun gargars bilisa qaman argachu dendes mn.gov/dhs/minnesotacare chalat berada.
Life is flux and change is the only constant. KFAI brings you Spelling, live at the Fine Line, Wednesday, May 14th. Spelling's new album, Portrait of My Heart, is a new sound for the Bay Area experimental mastermind. A more rock-forward approach, while still retaining her powerful melodies and vocals. Portrait of My Heart is Spelling at her most accessible and most adventurous. Opening the show is Earth. Tickets for Spelling at the Fine Line can be found at the First Avenue website. Visit first-avenue.com for more details.
Welcome back. We are joined by Representative Esther Agbaje from North Minneapolis, representing, I know the pollers are well represented. I'm from the south side here, so I'm in that space.
We still love you.
It's all good. I'm going to take that love as well. Thank you. I appreciate it. But again, thank you for tuning in, and thank you for joining us, Representative. Really appreciate you taking some time to share with us what's going on at the Capitol. So you mentioned some things that both parties have agreed on in this very complicated environment, the state legislative environment. What are some sticking points? What are some points at which do you feel like you're not either, and you're on the Ways and Means Committee, so you're getting all of those budget bills coming in, so you're going to understand all the conflict really intimately. So what are some of the sticking points, and then if you have some thoughts and ideas on how we can move through that, and what maybe special session or what might be the reality down the road here, getting into the end of the third quarter, midway through, or wherever we are in the process.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think if folks were watching some of the votes from the House side, at the very least, the transportation budget was one of the sticking points. I think that one is the one of the budgets that's passed with the least amount of votes so far. And that was hard because there were a couple of things that were rolling back some of the climate change policies that we had instituted 2 years ago, particularly around like vehicle miles traveled and reducing greenhouse gases, and also wanting to move people to public transit and building up a better environment to develop public transit. But that was a major fight because Republicans, for some reason, think only about roads and bridges and less so about other modes of transportation. And so I think that committee had a really hard time really trying to figure out where to land the plane. And so so we, as most Democrats, express their displeasure on that bill by voting no. And so we're hopeful that when they get into conference committee with the Senate, that they'll be able to do something to really help out to ensure that all modes of transportation are still available to all Minnesotans and that we are we're funding ways for people to get around. Another sticking point, which I'm sure folks who are in the education space have been watching really closely, is the first version of the House bill on the education budget is going to have a essentially a repeal of the unemployment insurance benefits that we were able to win for hourly workers. So these are people like cafeteria workers, school bus drivers, paraprofessionals, special education professionals, things like that. We were able to secure for them unemployment insurance benefits, which they have been fighting for probably in this space at least 20 years, but at least for the past 80 years, that is one area where those workers were never given access to unemployment insurance for the months that they were off from school. And that has a lot to do with our history of like who's in those jobs, the history of the state and the country of not valuing the people who are in those jobs and not valuing those jobs. But we were able in 2023 to say, like, no, we do value it. And people have been using it. And we have seen a huge retention in those workers. And in fact, actually, one of the things that one of the chairs likes to say is part of the reason you don't hear stories as much over these past 2 years about a shortage of school bus drivers is because of the unemployment insurance benefits that people were able to tap into. So we're still fighting really hard to keep that and to work on that. It's part of the reason the education budget has not yet gone up for a vote. That is still in negotiation. And there's still other sticking points that are up for negotiation. You know, the Republicans are making a really big deal about covering undocumented residents through Minnesota Care. But we know that that's a really important value that we have to make sure that everyone has access to health care and can stay healthy. And in fact, so many businesses were actually supportive of that, too, because they wanted to make sure that their workers could be healthy. So there's still a lot left. We probably still have another quarter to go in these next like 2 weeks or so. So every day will be something, and every day will be something new. And there is a potential for a special session. I mean, we're hopeful that we can still get everything done by May 19th, but if not, we have until June 30th to pass the state budget, and so we'll use all the tools available to us to make sure that that gets done.
Do you think there'll be a bonding bill? That's part two of my question.
Always a question. The even year is the year that's supposed to be a bonding year. We were only able to get part of that done in 2024. So we are hopeful that we can get another bonding bill this year. But again, I think it'll be that bill and the tax bill will be one of the last bills that goes up. So we'll see if we're able to get it done. But I know the chair and the co-chair in the House is my A-side brother, Representative Fu Lee. And so I know he's working really hard to make sure that we can get a bonding bill this year.
What up, Fu Lee?
Yeah.
Okay. Another question I have is a little off topic. So what's happened at the federal level for most of us is unconscionable. I mean, the haphazard, lack of compassion methodology of DOGE and their targeting of federal employees is just really, really sick to see, because there are folks that have spent their lifetime building a reputation and doing good work on behalf of all the citizens of the country and you know, whatever foreign interest we have as well. At this point in time, have you heard any of your colleagues on the GOP side have buyer's remorse, feeling like, man, maybe this is not the direction we were hoping? Or are they all just keeping the game face like everything is lovely? I'm just curious, because you know you have these colleagues and you see them in a different way than those of us who are even lobbyists. Who, I mean, sometimes we see you all have a little more of a collegial vibe amongst colleagues on different sides of the aisle, but has it been widespread, or maybe a little pocket of folks that are dissenters to the current administration at the federal level, or is most everyone kind of closed-lipped like that one uncle who's crazy and they didn't want to talk about it?
It's a mix of both. I think, you know, I think early on, actually, in like February or something, when they started talking about Medicaid cuts at the federal level, I think there was a group of Republicans, 14 of them, if I remember, sent a letter to the to our congressional delegation to say, please don't do these cuts, right? Like, so, you know, there are folks who understand that there are dire circumstances coming. There are others who would like to act as if nothing is wrong. And so I think it just depends on who you ask, and it depends on how real they're being with their constituents. I'm sorry, but at the end of the day, it's their constituents too. Like, let's look at the Farm Bill, right? There are already cuts to USDA. There's already cuts to tracking avian flu, bird flu. There's already cuts to making sure that that's not getting in our food supply. All of that is going to fall on states. And we have tried in our agriculture budget to try to mitigate that as much as possible. But at the end of the day, we are going to need those federal inspectors. That may not be happening. You know, people are with all the tariffs on today, off tomorrow, up this percent, down this percent. This country's in, this country's out. You know, it's throwing the markets out of whack. Now, again, you know, not everyone is in the stock market, but the stock market eventually starts to affect people's real dollars. And there are folks who you may have been hearing on the radio that are talking about how, yeah, I voted for him and yeah, I like his policies, but this is really hurting my business. So I imagine that's happening to small businesses across the state. You know, I have a friend of mine, she works part-time at a jewelry store. She said that with the tariffs that have been coming on, like the prices are just going way up and they can't pass all of that on to consumers. Exactly. So I think folks just have to be real with themselves. It's one thing to be on different ideological spectrums, but you do have to be real with your constituents about what's happening and whether or not that's something they want to go through. And that's a decision I think Republicans will have to make for themselves.
Well, let's do real quick internal analysis, though, because as much as we know that they're absolutely having an interesting time on the other side, we're also struggling internally within this party. Talk about how the work internally to keep the caucus together, first and foremost, because, again, interesting time for y'all, interesting time for the Senate. But in general, how do we start to push a lot of this stuff?
I think for us as Democrats, we do really have to look in the mirror and say, like, where have we not met people where they are? I think that's the biggest thing. I think we saw in 2024, particularly at the presidential election, we had a lot of people stay home. Folks may want to blame this constituency or that constituency, but we had a lot of people stay home. And why did they stay home? And it's because they didn't hear a vision from either us or from the Republicans. And so this is a time where we can coalesce around a real vision that is about ensuring that people live a prosperous and healthy life in the United States and in Minnesota. And we can do that. We have been doing that, and I think we need to show people that, but we also need to invite people into that. So I think that's another thing. People may not feel that they necessarily have agency in what the government is doing or what the government can do for them. And so I think it's really important to ensure that we are inviting people into our spaces, we're being hospitable to them, and we're making sure that we are speaking their same language and that they feel a connection to us. And I think that's part of it, right? People want to see government in action, and I think as Democrats, we need to show them how we're in action. And whether that's passing things or whether that's showing them how what we've passed is benefiting their lives in a material way or showing them how we are fighting and standing up against some of these bad actions that are happening. So I think it's a mix of both. There's a lot of work that we definitely need to do. And I hope that in the election cycles we still have to come, that we can show people that we have a real message for them and that it's a message that they want to participate in.
And I do hope they hear that, because it's a consistent message. It's a consistent set of values. It's a consistent service to the population, no matter what side of the party, what part you're on, where sometimes people like to, in Minnesota, be like, oh, that's just them being this way right now, or oh, he's just crabby and we'll just forgive them, or oh, he did make that decision, but now everything's better, so it's okay. I really hope they don't do that this time, because they wanted to blame Biden for pandemic stuff. And now this is going to be that way again. And you got to put the blame where the blame is and not let off. They cannot excuse the behavior once they get what they want. And I hope the constituents remember that, because in agriculture, they're still going to suffer. Even if he says, oopsies, I'm going to reverse all this and you can have it back, it's still going to be, they're saying, pandemic level impacts. So I hope they don't forget and they don't pass blame. Vote for the ones who are consistent in their messages, in their bills, and in their decisions. And that's who you vote for if they align with your values. But don't give them a pass if he switches, change their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because it will come back, and you know, everybody knows that. Everybody knows that.
any parting words, Representative, that you want to leave for Northsiders or for folks who are listening, tuning in from Minneapolis and St. Paul? Thank you for your leadership. Thank you for all your hard work. Thank you for being the most credentialed member of the legislature.
Hey.
I'm gonna put it out there.
Pedigree.
She's dope, got that pedigree, you know. And but you fighting on behalf of many of us, the constituents that you have, and constituents that align with you that may not be in your district. Thank you for all that work. Any parting words that you have for the citizenry? We're getting ready to have Minneapolis elections, and St. Paul's got some elections. School board, or I don't know if they're school board, but I know city council, park board, a few other municipal races that
Mayor
are on.
St. Paul, and also school board, city council's next term. Minneapolis is mayor and city council, as well as our park board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same thing for St. Paul?
St. Paul has a different...
St. Paul's up for mayor, though.
Just the mayor, though.
The mayor's up. Okay.
And, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So still, election. We don't have to wait 2 years for an election. Election was coming up pretty soon. But any words that you want to leave for folks on how to get engaged or how to reach out to you and express themselves? I don't want to send people there who are going to send you nasty messages, but any parting words?
No, thanks so much. This has been excellent. I really enjoyed my time here. I would just say to folks, it's a really difficult time, but, rest, take care of yourself, take care of your community, and find your strength in that. And, we will all get through this together like we always have. But if folks want to reach out on the official side, it's rep.esther.agbaje@house.mn.gov. And on the campaign side, it's esther@esteragbaje.com. And my website's also my name. And me and my team are happy to work with you and reach out if you have any questions.
That's right. Esther's taking care of that business. Thank you for tuning in to another episode, Beats, Rhymes, and Democracy. We will be back next week, y'all.
Man,
we are out.
And House Notes is next, even though we ain't there right now.
That's right.
'cause you can't decide what you really want from me. Why does it have to be like this? I can never tell. Getting upset in your desperation, screaming and hollering. How can this love become so paper thin? You're playing so hard to get. You're making me sweat just to hold your attention. I can't give you nothing more if you ain't giving nothing to me. Don't you know that?
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and on the web at kfai.org.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.